Greetings, friends. This is J.C. Yoakum with Hymn Time. By reading hymn history, we learn that singers in all lands tend to express themselves in the same musical idioms, and their poets do likewise in using similar figures of speech. The history of our first hymn this morning further proves this fact. Although written in many different languages, it is still sung to the tune first used by the composer's native people. Also, the message with references to God's great love, His mighty works, His great mercy, and His great glory is held precious by His people of all nationalities in all walks of life. The words of the very popular hymn, How Great Thou Art, were written in 1886 by Carl Boberg of Sweden, and at that time bore the title, O Mighty God. Boberg's poem of praise was actually a record of God's mighty works as the poet had observed them in the world about him in his native land. Boberg's poem had been published in one or two periodicals in Sweden and then apparently forgotten. But someone noticed that the metrical pattern of the new stanzas was identical with that of an old familiar Swedish folk song, and quickly substituted the new words for the old ones, and before his death, Boberg had the satisfaction of hearing his hymn sung to the simple but moving melody of a tune that had become one of the cherished possessions of his people. Undoubtedly, the original poet well knew the Old Testament prophecy contained in Isaiah 9:6, in which the coming Messiah was spoken of as Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, and took the phrase Mighty God directly from that verse. Strangely enough, the wonderful poem did not remain in Sweden nor in the native tongue of poet Boberg. Before the poet knew it, the stanzas were translated into many foreign tongues, including Russian, Polish, and German, in the process of which some of the words and phrases were altered to conform to the thought patterns and expressions of the languages into which they were translated, while the translations mirrored the spiritual experiences of the translators as well as that of the man who had written the original in Sweden years before. The first English translation was made in 1925 by Professor E. Gustav Johnson of North Park College, Chicago, Illinois, and was first published in an official hymn book in 1931. Among those who discovered the hymn in its Russian rendition was a native of London, England, who was serving as a missionary in the Ukraine during the time from 1923 to 1939, Stuart Hine. Unaware of Boberg's original or of Johnson's English translation, Hine decided in 1948 to make an English translation of a hymn he considered a noble Russian affirmation of Christian faith, and Hine gave it the present title, How Great Thou Art. And the hymn has captured the fancy of the church-going public everywhere. As we listen to the words now, we should stand in awe of the greatness of God and remember that we, as His creatures, stand in need of His great love and that we are unworthy recipients of His wonderful mercy. God's people of all climes and tongues love and sing, How Great Thou Art!
O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider
Thunder,
thy power through all.
In the winter of 1863 and 64, the city of Newark, New Jersey, was deeply stirred by a great revival. The place of the meeting was thronged day after day. At one of the services, the sermon was from the text, "They told him that Jesus of Nazareth passeth by." Among those present was a school teacher, Miss Etta Campbell, who was moved to write the familiar song based on this text. It was one of a small collection of songs in scrapbook form which R.D. Sankey took with him when he and Dwight Moody went to England in 1873 on a preaching crusade. Sankey made very frequent use of it as a solo, especially during the opening month of their campaign, and at that time it was the most effective song he had. When the evangelist began work in Edinburgh, where many of the people were strongly opposed to the singing of anything but psalms in church, Mr. Sankey took the precaution to bring this song on for his first solo. Its strong scriptural flavor helped to disarm prejudice and to open the way for the singing of other hymns of human composure. Some years later, Dr. Andrew A. Bonner wrote, "Had you been in Edinburgh during the 4 months which these brethren, Moody and Sankey, were there in 1873, you would have seen multitudes of all ages and stations hastening to the place of worship at whatever hour any day of the week." The scene was exactly that described in the hymn so often sung and so much blessed. What means this eager, anxious throng which moves with busy haste along? These wondrous gatherings day by day. What means this strange commotion, pray? Listen as the chorus sings, "Jesus of Nazareth passeth by."
What means this eager, anxious throng, which moves with busy haste along? These wondrous gatherings day by day, what means this strange commotion, pray? Jesus of Nazareth passeth by. In accent such the throng replied, Jesus of Nazareth passeth by. Who is this Jesus? Why should he the city move so mightily? A passing stranger has he still to move again. Jesus of Nazareth, passeth by. Jesus is he who once below man's pathway trod in pain and woe, and burdened once where'er he came, brought out their sick and death and lame. The blind rejoice to hear the cry, Jesus of Nazareth passeth by. The blind rejoice to hear the cry, Jesus of Nazareth passeth by. Again he comes from place to place, his holy footprints we can trace. He parted at that threshold gate, he in this condescends to stay. Shall we not gladly raise the cry, Jesus of Nazareth passeth by? Shall we not gladly raise the cry, Jesus of Nazareth passeth by?
Mary Lethbury holds a unique place among our American hymn writers. It has been given to few poets to have their hymns used by as large and enthusiastic and cultural audiences as have sung the hymns of this gifted woman. The child of devout Christian parents, she was born in Manchester, New York in 1841. Her father was a local preacher in the Methodist Episcopal Church, and two of her brothers were ordained to the Methodist ministry. She early developed a talent for composing verses and for drawing, and as a mere girl, her favorite pastime was the writing of short poems adorned with original illustrations. But almost from the start, the pastime became a part of her religion. One day, she seemed to hear a voice saying to her, "My child, you have a gift of weaving verse and producing visions with pencil. Concentrate these to me, and thoroughly, as you do your inmost spirit." She was obedient to this heavenly call. As the years passed and her talents matured, Miss Lethbury became widely known as a contributor to periodicals for children and young people. In the summer of 1873, being weary of being confined to her studio and plagued by poor eyesight, the 32-year-old Miss Lethbury decided to close shop and attend camp meetings that were held each summer at beautiful Lake Chautauqua. At the camp meeting grounds, Miss Lethbury met Bishop John H. Vincent and later became his assistant. In 1880, Bishop Vincent remarked to Miss Lethbury that it would be fitting if Chautauqua Circles had a study song for members to sing at their gatherings. So Miss Lethbury slipped away to a hillside overlooking the lake. She carried with her a Bible, turning to the story of Christ feeding the multitudes at the Sea of Galilee. She compared the scene to that of the throng of worshipers at Lake Chautauqua. She wrote the beautiful hymn that William F. Sherman set to music, "Break Thou the Bread of Life, dear Lord, to me, as Thou didst break the loaves beside the sea. Beside the sacred page I seek Thee, Lord, my spirit pants for Thee, O living Word." Listen to "Break Thou the Bread of Life."
Beyond the sacred.
very beautiful hymn of thanksgiving and praise bears the title, For the Beauty of the Earth. We have only brief biographical notes on the composer, who was Folliot S. Pierpont. He was the son of William Horne Pierpont of Bath, England. He was born at Spa Villa, October 7, 1835. This hymn first appeared in 1864. Mr. Pierpont was credited with one other hymn, O Cross, O Cross of Shame. That was written earlier. His name does not appear on the list of graduates from Oxford, Cambridge, or Edinburgh universities, nor is he on the clerical list. However, we need only to listen to the words of his hymn to know that he possessed the great spiritual wisdom. Listen to the words of For the Beauty of the Earth.
For the beauty of the earth, for the glory of the skies, for the love which from above, over and around us lies, right around who we raise, this our hymn of grateful praise. For the wonder of each hour, of the day and of the night, hill and vale and tree and floor, sun and moon and stars of light, bright our God who we raise, is our hymn of grateful praise. For the joy of human love, brother, sister, parent, child, friend on earth and friends above, for all gentle thoughts and mine, Christ our God who
It has been said that every hymn has its story. The problem lies in finding the story. Most hymns of lasting worth are the results of events or experiences that particularly move the author to write them. But there are exceptions. The exceptions rather than the rule shows in the writing of I Need Thee Every Hour. Anne Sherwood Hawkes was in the best of health. She had not a care in the world. No comfort was lacking in her Brooklyn home. She was in the prime of life. She was the idol of a devoted husband and family. On a clear day in June 1872, Anne Sherwood Hawkes was so happy that her thoughts turned to a feeling of gratitude to God for her many blessings. And I remember well the morning she wrote in recalling that day. She said she felt a sense of nearness to the Master. And these words, I need thee every hour, were ushered into my mind. So it was during hours of sweet security and peace that Mrs. Hawkes put her housework aside and on the wings of love and joy wrote her famous hymn poem. The writing of poetry was not new with Anne Sherwood Hawkes, ever since she was a teenage girl in Hossack, New York, where she was born in 1835. She had written verse. Moving to Brooklyn in 1857, she united with the Hanson Place Baptist Church and was further encouraged in her writing by her pastor, Mr. Robert Lowry. Mrs. Hawkes gave her poem, I Need Thee Every Hour, to Dr. Lowry. Lowry, who was author, composer of many notable hymns, wrote a chorus and set the verses to music. The new hymn was first sung in public November of that year at a convention in Cincinnati. Its popularity was spontaneous. Dr. Lowry published it in his songbook, Royal Diadem, and Ira Sankey sang it at the great revivals led by Dwight L. Moody in England and America. At that time, Mrs. Hawkes spoke of her hymn's popularity. She said, "I don't understand why it has so touched the heart of throbbing humanity." But in 1888, 16 years later, the housewife who had once known only hours of sweet security and peace understood. She has said that the death of her devoted husband cast the shadow of a great loss over her life. And for 30 years that followed, until she herself died in 1918, Anne Sherwood Hawkes turned to her own hymn for comfort. The words of Mrs. Hawkes should remind us of our very great need for a most gracious Lord, as we hear them sung at this time.
I need thee every hour.
Been listening to Hymn Time. Your narrator has been J.C. Yocum. This program is edited, compiled, and originates in Custer, Georgia. We invite you to tune in again next week at this same time. Until then, may God be with you.
We need.